And what I reported was what I had wanted to report. I had gotten sidetracked, like I always did, because I melted into my surroundings, could not remain separate from, apart from, objectivity, a foreign land to me. I went to tidal pool after tidal pool with my pathetic flashlight, losing my balance half a dozen times and almost falling. If anyone had been observing, and who is to say now that they were not? They would have seen a cursing, half-drunk, reckless biologist who had lost all perspective, who was out in the middle of nowhere for the second straight year and feeling vulnerable and lonely, even though she'd promised herself she would never get lonely. The things she had done and said that society labeled antisocial or selfish. Seeking something in the tidal pools that night, even though what she found during the day was miraculous enough. She might even have been shouting, screaming, whirling about those slippery rocks as if the best boots in the world couldn't fail you, send you falling to crack your skull, give you a forehead full of limpets and barnacles and blood. But the fact is, even though I didn't deserve it, did I deserve it? And had I really just been looking for something familiar? I found something miraculous, something that uncovered itself with its own light. I spied a glinting, wavery promise of illumination coming from one of the larger tidal pools, and it gave me pause. Did I really want a sign? Did I really want to discover something, or did I just think I did? Well, I decided I did want to discover something, because I walked toward it, suddenly sobered up enough to watch my steps, to shuffle along so I wouldn't crack my skull before I saw whatever it was in that pool. What I found when I finally stood there, hands on bent knees, peering down into that tidal pool, was a rare species of colossal starfish, six-armed, larger than a saucepan, that bled a dark gold color into the still water as if it were on fire. Most of us professionals eschewed its scientific name for the more apt destroyer of worlds. It was covered in thick spines, and along the edges I could just see, fringed with emerald green, the most delicate of transparent cilia, thousands of them propelling it along upon its appointed route as it searched for its prey, other lesser starfish. I had never seen a destroyer of worlds before, even in an aquarium, and it was so unexpected that I forgot about the slippery rock and, shifting my balance, almost fell, steadying myself with one arm propped against the edge of the tidal pool. But the longer I stared at it, the less comprehensible the creature became, the more it became something alien to me, and the more I had a sense that I knew nothing at all about nature, about ecosystems. There was something about my mood and its dark glow that eclipsed sense that made me see this creature, which had indeed been assigned a place in the taxonomy, catalogued, studied, and described, irreducible down to any of that. And if I kept looking, I knew that ultimately I would have to admit I knew less than nothing about myself as well, whether that was a lie or the truth. When I finally wrenched my gaze from the starfish and stood again, I could not tell where the sky met the sea, whether I faced the water or the shore. I was completely adrift and dislocated, and all I had to navigate by in that moment was the glowing beacon below me. Turning that corner, encountering the crawler for the first time, was a similar experience, at a thousand times the magnitude. If on those rocks those many years ago I could not tell sea from shore, here I could not tell stairs from ceiling, and even though I steadied myself with an arm against the wall seemed to cave in before my touch, and I struggled to keep from falling through it. There, in the depths of the tower, I could not begin to understand what I was looking at, and even now I have to work hard to pull it together from fragments. It is difficult to tell what blanks my mind might be filling in just to remove the weight of so many unknowns. Did I say I had seen golden light? As soon as I turned that entire corner, it was no longer golden but blue-green, and the blue-green light was like nothing I'd experienced before. It surged out, blinding and bleeding and thick and layered and absorbing. It so overwhelmed my ability to comprehend shapes within it that I forced myself to switch from sight to focus at first on reports from other senses. The sound that came to me now was like a crescendo of ice or ice crystals shattering to form an unearthly noise that I had mistaken earlier for buzzing and which began to take on an intense melody and rhythm that filled my brain. Vaguely, from some far-off place, I realized that the words on the wall were being infused with sound as well, but that I had not had the capacity to hear it before. The vibration had a texture and a weight, and with it came a burning smell, as of late fall leaves, or like some vast and distant engine close to overheating. The taste on my tongue was like brine set ablaze. No words can, no photographs could. As I adjusted to the light, the crawler kept changing at a lightning pace, as if to mock my ability to comprehend it. It was a figure within a series of refracted panes of glass. It was a series of layers in the shape of an archway. It was a great slug-like monster, ringed by satellites of even odder creatures. It was a glistening star. My eyes kept glancing off of it as if an optic nerve was not enough. Then it became an overwhelming hugeness in my battered vision, seeming to rise and keep rising as it leapt toward me. The shape spread until it was even where it was not, or should not have been. It seemed now more like a kind of obstacle or wall or thick closed door blocking the stairs. Not a wall of light, gold, blue, green, existing in some other spectrum, but a wall of flesh that resembled light, with sharp, curving elements within it, and textures like ice when it is frozen from flowing water. An impression of living things lazily floating in the air around it, like soft tadpoles. But at the limits of my vision, so I could not tell if this was akin to those floating dark motes that are tricks of the eye that do not exist. Within this fractured mass, within all of these different impressions of the crawler, half blinded but still triangulating through my other senses, I thought I saw a darker shadow of an arm, or a kind of echo of an arm in constant blurring motion, continuously imparting to the left-hand wall a repetition of depth and signal that made its progress laboriously slow, its message, its code of change, of recalibrations and adjustments, of transformations, and perhaps another dark shadow, vaguely head-shaped above the arm, but as indistinct as if I had been swimming in murky water and seen in the distance a shape obscured by thick seaweed. I tried to pull back now, to creep back up the steps, but I couldn't, whether because the crawler had trapped me or my brain had betrayed me. I could not move. The crawler changed, or I was beginning to black out repeatedly and come back to consciousness. It would appear as if nothing was there, nothing at all, as if the words wrote themselves, and then the crawler would tremble into being and then wink out again, and all that remained constant was a suggestion of an arm and the impression of the words being written. What can you do when your five senses are not enough? Because I still couldn't truly see it here, any more than I had seen it under the microscope, and that's what scared me the most. Why couldn't I see it? In my mind, I stood over the starfish at Rock Bay, and the starfish grew and grew until it was not just the tidal pool, but the world, and I was teetering on its rough, luminous surface, staring up at the night sky again, while the light of it flowed up and through me. Against the awful pressure of that light, as if the entire weight of Area X were concentrated here, I changed tactics, tried to focus just on the creation of the words on the wall, the impression of a head, or a helmet, or what? Somewhere, above the arm, a cascade of sparks that I knew were living organisms. A new word upon the wall, and me still not seeing, and the brightness coiled within me assumed an almost hushed quality, as if I were in a cathedral. The enormity of this experience, combined with the heartbeat and the crescendo of sound from its ceaseless writing, to fill me up until I had no room left. This moment, which I might have been waiting for my entire life, all unknowing, this moment of an encounter with the most beautiful, the most terrible thing I might ever experience, was beyond me. What inadequate recording equipment I had brought with me, and what an inadequate name I had chosen for it, the crawler. Time elongated was nothing but fuel for the words this thing had created on the wall, for who knew how many years, for who knew what purpose. I don't know how long I stood at the threshold, watching the crawler, frozen. I might have watched it forever and never noticed the awful passage of the years. But then what? What occurs after revelation and paralysis? Either death or a slow and certain thawing, a returning to the physical world. It is not that I became used to the crawler's presence, but that I reached a point, a single infinitesimal moment, when I once again recognized that the crawler was an organism, a complex, unique, intricate, awe-inspiring, dangerous organism. It might be inexplicable. It might be beyond the limits of my senses to capture, or my science, or my intellect. But I still believed I was in the presence of some kind of living creature, one that practiced mimicry using my own thoughts. For even then, I believed that it might be pulling these different impressions of itself from my mind and projecting them back at me as a form of camouflage to thwart the biologist in me, to frustrate the logic left in me. With an effort, I could feel in the groan of my limbs a dislocation in my bones. I managed to turn my back on the crawler. Just that simple, wrenching act was such a relief. As I hugged the far wall in all its cool roughness, I closed my eyes. Why did I need vision when all it did was keep betraying me? And started to crab walk my way back, still feeling the light upon my back, feeling the music from the words, the gun I had forgotten all about digging into my hip. The very idea of gun now seemed as pathetic and useless as the word sample. Both implied aiming at something. What was there to aim at? I had only made it a step or two when I felt a rising sense of heat and weight and a kind of licking, lapping wetness, as if the thick light was transforming into the sea itself. I had thought perhaps I was about to escape, but it wasn't true. With just one more step away, as I began to choke, I realized that the light had become a sea. Somehow, even though I was not truly underwater, I was drowning. The franticness that rose within me was the awful formless panic of a child who had fallen into a fountain and known for the first time, as her lungs filled with water, that she could die. There was no end to it, no way to get past it. I was awash in a brothy green-blue ocean alight with sparks, and I just kept on drowning and struggling against the drowning until some part of me realized I would keep drowning forever. I imagined tumbling from the rocks, falling, battered by the surf, washing up thousands of miles from where I was, unrecognizable in some other form, but still retaining the awful memory of this moment. Then I felt the impression from behind me of hundreds of eyes beginning to turn in my direction, staring at me. I was a thing in a swimming pool being observed by a monstrous little girl. I was a mouse in an empty lot being tracked by a fox. I was the prey the starfish had reached up and pulled down into the tidal pool.